Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Ayn Rand responded to writing blocks by playing solitaire until she had a creative idea. Norman Mailer responded by typing any junk from his subconscious and throwing it away until he had a creative idea. And what is your advice? Well, it's sort of like Mailer, but more specific. I put down in typing anything that feels relevant to the project at hand, even if I don't know why. Mostly, I put down questions, just streams of things I'd like to know but don't understand. General questions, concrete questions, whatever my subconscious gives me as related to the project. Any thoughts, any fragment of an answer that occurs to me, all of that I'll just blurt out, and I have no block because, as one person put it to me, it was very helpful. He says that you don't have to have blocks writing. You can always write something, and that's true. You can write just a whole series of questions and phrases and so on that your mind is saying, do something with this in connection with this topic. So it's not junk. It's stuff you give your subconscious the order, feed me only anything related to this broad topic or area. I think of it as vacuuming your subconscious of the irrelevant. But now you're concerned only with getting on paper something. You're absolutely indifferent to grammar, to logical sequence, to objectivity, to anything except blurting out however you can material that you can then take a night or two, a day or two away from, and then reread and say, oh, this is a question, this is an answer, this is going to take me too far into another field, so I cut it out. You start shaping the material, and it gives rise to a whole set of other questions, and you keep going until you start to get more answers than questions and some idea of structure, etc. And finally, you're ready to try a rough draft. That's the way I do it. I'm a 29-year-old guy and recently met a beautiful 18-year-old girl who likes me. I care for her and admire her as far as 18-year-olds go, but she's not my equal. And I often find myself talking down to her as though I were her father. I decided that she's too young for me to pursue a serious relationship with. But should I have sex with her if she understands the terms and still wants to? Well, there's only one question, I think. In your honest judgment, are you her soulmate in some real sense? If you can say yes to that, and then I don't see anything wrong with a sexual relationship. But you have to feel that you have certain really basic personal values that are inherent in you being you, and they are equally present and strong in her, equally real in her. And that is what you connect to, and there's no problem. The question is, you may feel that when you just look at her and talk to her. But from the way you write, it doesn't sound like you really believe that. You say that she's not my equal. I've often talked down to her. She's too young. It's not a serious relationship. All of that does not really sound like a community of fundamental values. The question you should think of is this. If you kept all of that in mind as you start to undress or undress her, but you keep all that in mind, do you still want it? And only you can answer. Is romantic love possible when one of the partners is disabled and cannot perform? I'm not talking about couples that had been in love previously and because of some health issue can no longer perform. I'm talking about someone who is disabled and alone and desires to try and connect, maybe via the internet, to a new potential partner. In principle, I would say yes, it is certainly possible, as long as you don't use fraud in the process. It's not necessary in your first email, your whole first set of emails, to announce your problems. You want first to give the person a chance to know you, to know your values to some extent, to know in effect what your essence is. But I do think you're obligated to tell before the first date, to tell him in essentials what it is you have also. And then you see what happens. He might not like it and not want a date, and that may make you not want him, vice versa. Or he might not be turned off. If he is, there's an endless number on the internet. Now, you say you can no longer perform. And the question is, what is your idea of performing? I assume you mean sexually. Are you a paraplegic? You can't move? Do you have the ability to move your hands and to stroke something? Can you move your tongue? Can you see and say what he's doing? There are many forms of, quote, performing that would keep a certain man happy if he is in love with you. I know someone who has basically free movement in a thumb only, and his relationship is fine. I don't think his sex life is what it once was, but there's no such problem. So don't assume that, you know, the missionary position or any variant of it is a requirement of every man. I enjoy dancing in private, but can't do so when anyone is watching because I'm too embarrassed. Does this mean I'm second-handed since I'm suppressing my desire to dance in order to avoid the judgment of onlookers who would be unimpressed or possibly even offended by my skill? Well, a lot of factors are involved here, many of which would justify embarrassment and not have anything to do with second-handedness. For instance, you're not advanced enough, and it's a context, a floor, an event of advanced dancers. The fact that you like it, you should suppress it or not go in that context. It doesn't mean anything bad about you. Or how are you dressed? What is the occasion? If everyone is wearing, you know, a tux and a gown and you've got sneakers and a torn T-shirt, you should be embarrassed. That has nothing to do with your psychology. You have to take that into account. And then what kind of dance did you want? Now, you say people would be offended. I never can imagine being offended if I'm doing the foxtrot and somebody is doing it next to me. But if I'm doing the foxtrot and they're doing, oh, I don't even know the name of it anymore, grunge metal, I don't know, twists or something, I would be offended. But then you, what kind of dance are you dancing? And then also, how polite are you on the floor? If your idea of expressing your own desire is to, you know, take huge strides on a crowded floor, hit women with your elbow and step on feet, then they certainly will be unimpressed or offended. But taking all that aside, that's none of the things that are bothering you. Only the issue of your skill, then you have to simply ask, how bad are they objectively? And if they're just too primitive for the occasion, then I would stay aside, improve, and if you're at the point where you can dance legitimately, all the context is right, and yet you feel embarrassed, then that sounds like it is second-handedness. You're worried about what they think, even though you can do it, or even if you can almost do it as well as they do it. And I think the only solution to your problem in this case is march onto the floor 2 hours a night, 7 days a week for 1 week with a girl that you like, not necessarily love. And just dance and dance until the embarrassment burns itself out. And if more than that, you can always go to somebody sitting at a table next to you and say, what do you think of the way I dance? Tell me honestly. And find out what they think. And if they're offended, just ask. I mean, they'll think you're strange, but if you can get an answer, that might help. Can an attractive person fall in love with an ugly person? Yes, if they have fundamental shared values. And I would add, and if the ugliness doesn't chase off the other person before he finds out. Maybe they need to have a lengthy email and phone relationship to establish character first. Also, take in mind if you're that ugly, there is such a thing as plastic surgery. And they can basically make anybody over into anything. And if you don't have the money and it's preventing you from having a love relationship, I would seriously think of making tremendous cuts in your other expenditures, down to food and clothes, in order to get yourself in a position, because love is a total essential in human life. Now, if the ugly person has some really disgusting, repellent form of ugliness that he or she cannot eliminate by any means. I tried to think of one. The only one I could think of was something like eruptions of greenish pus over the person's face every few minutes and no way to stop it. I would say then, it would be, I can't see how an attractive person could fall in love in a case like that. Maybe, but I couldn't. I can't imagine it. Just maybe if you really like the other person, have her wear a mask. A mask, you know, that's a contour, not a Halloween mask. But that is a problem I don't see how to solve. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.